state?
I'm here. Thank you for asking me for the meeting of time. So my name is Nicole. I'm an alcoholic and definitely a cocaine addict. My sobriety date, clean date is 10/5/2018. And for that, I am truly, truly grateful. I am nervous, extremely nervous, like a little cuckoo kind of nervous. My heart is in my throat. And I don't know why I'm nervous as much as I am. Like I was telling Chris, this is a different type of intimacy and being vulnerable. But what I know today is, you show up when you feel uncomfortable. That's the thing. And so I'm here, man. And, going to have a little courage and go through this thing. I'm going to put a disclaimer out there real quick. Okay. I'm going to put that out there for you. So I like to cuss a lot. Okay. I don't know what to tell you about that. You know, my higher power is still working on me, and I'm going to try my hardest to really then. What else? Also, I like to ramble. Okay. And, I'm glad Chris gave me this little format thing to stay, within, but I don't know, bruh. I'm going to try my hardest to stay within it. But, so I like to think that I'm funny. So I'm going to try my hardest to be as entertaining, but at the same time, hopefully give somebody some type of hope. Right. So with that being said, I was born in Chicago, Illinois, September 5th of 1981. I'm glad I said that correctly because all week I've been saying 2008. I don't know why, but that's not when I was born. I was born in Chicago on September 5th of 1981, to a preteen mom. When I say preteen, I am saying the age of 13, right? So you can just imagine what she was going through at that time. Soon after that, my mother had my brother, about a year and a half later. So at that time, I really don't have any vivid memories of my childhood in Chicago. What I was told was, it was very hard. And I'm sure you've heard stories and, known the people talking about the South Side of Chicago. My mom was the sixth of seven children, and they lived in the projects on the 15th floor. And, it was really rough, three bedroom, and it was just really rough. I really didn't know my grandmother, but what I was told that she was a gambler. She was addicted to gambling, meaning she ran tables in the apartment, and it was pretty rough. What else? Also, the roots addiction has been a part of my life for a long time. I had, my mother was addicted to crack cocaine. I had two aunts that were addicted to crack cocaine. I had an uncle who was addicted to heroin. Abuse has always been a part of, my roots in my family. My biological family has always been rooted in some type of dysfunction, right? So moving on, my childhood comes into, vision is when we moved to, somehow we made it to Austin, Texas, right? And we lived on the east side of Austin, in Booker T Apartments, right? The projects, actually. And for me, I was probably around six or seven around that time. And then that's when things, became a little cuckoo, right? Knowing now, I know that that's when my mom and my aunt were on crack cocaine, right? And so things were crazy, meaning, we were all over the place, right? As much as my mom was neglectful and just, on crack, we were always with her and me and my brother. And so my mom, how she fed her addiction was she prostituted and she also stole. And nowadays we call that being a booster, right? And so we were, always with her and seeing these things, something like that. I don't remember seeing her smoke crack, but I just remember that feeling of being unsettled and, just being drug around everywhere, right? And I was really close with my brother. I took care of him everywhere we went. you know. Yeah. So soon after that, you know, a life changing event that had happened was we were in a store with my mother, and you know, she was stealing, and we were presented as decoys. You know, they see these little kids; they're not going to think that, you know, this woman is, you know, has the audacity to, you know, steal something with these kids, you know what I mean? And, but, you know, that wasn't true. She stole some stuff and we made it out of the store, but as soon as she stepped out of the store, the police were there, right? And they arrested her. And so at that point, the life-changing thing that happened was when CPS was entered into my life, right? And so at that time, CPS my mom went to jail, of course. And at that time, my mom, I mean, the CPS did not, they made a decision to not put us in foster care. They placed us in the home of my aunt and my uncle, my mom's sister and her husband, right? And because they thought that was the safer place, you know, and it was not the safer place, right? So let me give you a picture real quick. So let me go ahead and let you know as a child, you know, I was a very quiet, very compliant child, you know. As much as my mom was probably running around crazy and shit, there was no abuse or anything, you know. You know, she was loving when she was with us, and when she wasn't on drugs or whatever like that. But there was no type of abuse, and because me and my brother, I like to say we were good kids, you know. Yeah. So let me show you a picture of CPS based. Putting us in the home of our aunts, you know, just based off the fact that, you know, they were the, in my family, they were the only people who had, you know, they lived in this big ass house on South Congress. My uncle was, he worked at the post office, and y'all know back in the day, working at the post office was, that's a good job, right? And my aunt, for a long time, she was on a radio station, a gospel radio station, so she was embedded in her faith, her religion, and stuff like that. And they had three children, which were my cousins and stuff. So when we entered this home, of course, we were happy, you know, but it was shell shock for us because, they were extremely abusive for actually, in my opinion, for no particular reason at all. And like I said, I was a very compliant child, so I was always fucking dumbfounded on why the fuck I'm getting in trouble, right? And at this time, and I don't know about you guys, but, you know, in the Black culture, there's a lot of, if one person gets in trouble, everybody gets in trouble, right? Because all the kids are together and, you know, you got to watch out for this and this, this, and everybody got to hold each other accountable. And if so-and-so gets in trouble, everybody get in trouble. So, you know, and I had some badass cousins, bro, and we was always getting our ass beat, you know, and it sucked, right? Because it was physical abuse, you know, but, and I was scared a lot of time, right? And, but, you know, not me, I always move and keep it moving and was very compliant and stuff like that. But the person who got, you know, the brunt end of, you know, this abuse was my brother. And my brother was a mama's boy, right? And he cried about everything. And to be snatched up the way we were from my mother, you know, despite the fact that she was on crack, that's what we knew. And he just could not adapt. And he continued to, you know, act out, cry and all that type of stuff like that and get in trouble at school. And when he'll get home, he'll get in trouble at school, he would get his ass beat. And I'm not talking just, you know, oh, little tap on the booty, you know, didn't happen like that. I'm talking about bruises and stuff. And so soon one day, my brother went to school and the teacher touched his back and she lifted, he, you know, whelped or whatever, and she lifted up his shirt and was back, and she saw all the bruises that he had, right? And yeah, and so I remember just getting home from school and then CPS being there, and we were snatched up from there real quick, right? And as much as that was sad, it was a blessing, right? So this starts my life in foster care. In the beginning, me and my brother went to the same home, but, real quick. So my mom ended up going to prison for a long time. She did about 7 to 8 years in state prison. And in the between there, when that stuff happened with my aunt, I don't know what my mom was thinking, but she gave up her rights. Right. And, you know, and now I know that she was very betrayed and just very like, I can't believe this shit happened, you know, because she didn't know. you know, but you smoking crack, you don't know a lot of shit. Let's put it that way, right? So, so moving on, we were placed in the foster home. And in the beginning, me and my brother stayed in the same foster home, but he had a lot of behavior, emotional problems and stuff like that. So they soon moved him to another home. So we split up, right? And that right there starts my lonely journey. Let's put it that way, right? So a lot of people like to say the experience, you know, I'm pretty sure y'all have heard stories of people being in foster care and all that type of shit like that. And, you know, they were bad and horrible, but I gotta say mine was not like that, you know, and I am truly, truly grateful and blessed. I was placed in a home, a very loving home, in the country. I'm talking about West Texas, sorry, a small country town between San Saba and Llano, right? It's called Cherokee, Texas, right? And I'm talking about the hill country where there was one caution light. One caution light and dirt roads and one school, one everything, right? And you had to go 20 to 30 miles to go to the nearest grocery store, right? But I was placed with the lackeys and another culture shock. It was a culture shock because they were white. And obviously, as you can see, I am black, clearly. And it was a culture shock just because I didn't know, right? And these are different people. And but my foster dad, Charlie, was a preacher, right? And he was a cowboy, right? And he's probably one of the greatest men I've ever met in my whole so far, right? And my foster mother, Julie, she was a teacher. And at that, she was a special ed teacher, right? So they had two children, right? And so I was blessed with a home that was loving, that installed some very, you know, family oriented, religious, moral values in me, you know, that I forever be thankful for, you know, despite the fact that I ended up smoking crack, but, you know, so that happened. But at the same time, you know, I mean, it was lonely just because it was just, you know, I was different and I knew that, you know. Going to high school, you know, I was, succeeded highly in every sports, you know, tennis and basketball were my sports. It was a small town. We played six-man football. Everybody knew everybody. There was no room for nothing, right? Religion-wise, church was everything, right? We went to church Sunday morning and Sunday night, Wednesday. We went to church. You saw everybody every day at school, at church, you know, at the town meeting, everything like that, right? And I felt like I had this relationship with God, right? I knew, you know, I was okay with that, you know. Life was beautiful, man. I just didn't have a worry, you know, and I did not experiment with drugs or nothing like that because I was a nice, good Christian girl, you know. We didn't do that. That was not, you know, I was pretty good, you know what I mean? And, I'm not going to say I didn't go to a party and tried anything, but that wasn't my objective, you know. I was honest. I felt like I was honest and I didn't want to disrespect my foster parents like that, right? So when I get a little older, like in my teenage years and stuff like that, I started realizing that, I don't want to say different, but I knew that I was it was starting to become feel uncomfortable for me because coming up, I mean, I didn't have anybody to really identify with because I was usually the only black person there, right? Every fucking guy that came through there that was black, I dated, right? Because I needed to get some time. Something, you know, I knew that I like black guys, you know, but, it started to get very lonely, you know, even though I mingled and kept moving forward, you know, and, you know, I was, you know, everything in that school, you know, and socialized well and all that type of stuff. I knew that I was yearning for something else. Right. And then also on top of that, you know, dealing with your sexuality, you know, being a nice Christian girl, you know, I was like, oh my God, like there's absolutely no way that I can, you know, come out, you know what I mean? I was really confused, you know, and I didn't even know what that meant, you know? So I was just really confused and very awkward. Let's put it that way, you know? So I just went with the flow of everything and dare not whisper those words or even ask anybody what gay meant or anything like that, because I just didn't feel safe doing that, you know, because that town was just so sacred. Right. So when I graduated from high school, you know, I was probably the only one who went about 3 to 4 hours away from there. And I went to Blinn Junior College. A lot of people were going to Howard Payne University, Cisco, freaking Stephenville, you know, all those Abilene Christian College, all those places like that. And I was just like, I cannot stay here, bro. I can't, you know, and I need to get out. I need to do something. I didn't know what the hell I was going to do, but I wasn't going to stay there. So I took off to college. And by that time, I was back reacquainting with my mom and my family in Austin and stuff like that, right? So when I get to Blinn, and it was another culture shock, right? It was a culture shock because, again, here I enter a place of, you know, there was a lot of Black people. Okay, shit. And there was a lot of them. And I was, again, I was shell-shocked because, you know, I was happy. But at the same time, I didn't belong because I was way too white for them. Right. I didn't have, as much as I loved being Black and I was Black, I didn't have any Black culture. So it was very, very hard for me to fit in and try to be cool and stuff like that, you know. And I didn't really have any problem with, you know, getting along with anybody because I've always shown up as myself, you know. But I also knew that it was just really odd for me. Right. And then also on top of that, dealing with your sexuality, you know, I'm not really sure what I was going to do, right? And then eventually, you know, I started going out to Bryan College Station, and we started going to the clubs and stuff like that. And that's when I started drinking, you know, because, you know, I wanted to dance with these guys, wanted to dance with me, and I didn't know if I was, you know, all this type of shit like that. Like, I was just trying to get comfortable just looking at this dude, right? God damn it, right? And So I started drinking, you know, it was Smirnoff, and then I was like, fuck Smirnoff, and I started drinking beer, right? Smirnoff is just like, ugh. Anyways, but started doing that, experimented a little with coke. First time doing powder cocaine, I was like, ew, you know, like, it made my eyes water, my nose, it just wasn't my thing, right? When I started drinking and I started, you know, going out more and getting comfortable with myself, you know, and identifying that I am gay and this is what I want to do, I started looking for my people, looking for the gay folks. So I headed up to Austin, right? And then Austin is a whole different breed, you know, and I started, you know, experimenting with drugs, meaning, you know, ecstasy and stuff like that. And ecstasy was my shit back in the day. It was clubbing, it was drinking, it was all these things, right? And at this time, you know, I was still able to work. I mean, I was still able to go to school, right? And I was going back and forth from Austin and going to school and stuff like that until I couldn't anymore. Shit happened, and I ended up moving back to Austin. I didn't finish school and stuff. And then that starts my journey of can't get right, right? That starts my journey of me trying to figure out what the fuck I'm going to do with my life, right? And so for a long time, you know, it was like we like to say, you know, we were just partying for fun, right? I really didn't see anything wrong with it. I just know that it was like, I was just like somebody, like a piece of paper just floating in the air, you know, wherever I landed and you kicked me over. And it was just like that feather from Forrest Gump, you know, it was just like, you know, wherever I land, that's how I was moving, right? You know, dating girls and, you know, it was just very ew, you know? Got back introduced to coke powder and was, you know, doing that. And it was, you know, before the club, during the club, and after the club and stuff like that, you know. And in between there, you know, I ended up back in, that was my first time that I knew that I needed a change. And I moved back to, at that time, my foster parents were living in Brownwood, Texas, and I moved back with them and stuff like that. And then I finally came out to them and, they didn't understand, but they were loving and accepting, right? And that right there made me just really like, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be gay. I'm okay with that. They okay with that. That's what matters, right? Soon after that, living with them again and stuff, things changed, and I started going out more, right? And so I couldn't find cocaine, and then somebody introduced me to meth. And what the fuck? Like, it's not my thing, but I did it, right? And I did it for 3 months, right? I did it really good until I stole some guns from my foster parents because they had a ranch at that time, and I stole some rifles for them, and I pawned them, right? And you know, about a couple of months down the road, I get caught with them. I mean, I get, you know, they report it stolen, go to jail, you know, get, they actually pawned me. I mean, he pawned, got me out of jail and stuff like that. But then after that, you know, since I had this felony case, you know, I was a theft of a firearm. That sounds really rough. When people say that, it's like, oh my God, I wasn't just, you know, I don't know. It just sounds fucked up. But anyway, so then after that, I got on probation, right? And so this is when, you know, the consequences didn't matter, right? By this time, I was addicted to meth, even though it was three months or whatever like that, 3 or 4 months. I could not stop, you know, I could not stop showing up to my probation visits, not high, right? It didn't matter. Like I couldn't imagine, you know, I didn't feel like I was going to get in trouble for anything. Like me go to jail, I didn't even do nothing. You know, that's how I felt. Like even though this lady was telling me, hey, little girl, you better stop doing this shit because if not, I'm sending you to prison, right? And it just didn't register. Like the getting high and living that lifestyle was just so much more important to me. It didn't matter, right? And I think I lost so much weight. Oh my God, you know? And so, yeah, until, you know, and I remember her telling me that, and I was really, really trying not to use, and I just kept using. And eventually she sent me to prison for a year. And bruh, let me tell you something. I may look hardcore, I probably, you know, or I may look like I'm a gangster or whatever, you know, I am not even close to that, right? I don't fight. I don't do any of that, right? I don't give a damn how I come off, but that is not the place for me, right? So I get out of jail and move back to Austin. And again, it goes with the can't get right, you know, try to go back to school. I try to do a lot of things, you know, and eventually, you know, I met somebody in prison and they sold cocaine, crack, actually. And then that's when I started looking and seeing, you know, what the fuck crack was about. Me and her, we just snorted crack. I mean, snorted coke and all that. But, you know, something happened and I couldn't get coke. Right. And then I tried crack. I don't know how. It was by myself. I don't know how I graduated from that, right? And I did it. I figured it out. And let me tell you something, bro. Crack is whack. Just like Whitney Houston said, man. That shit, but I loved it, right? It was the most important thing to me at that moment. And I remember telling my mom, you know, and by this time she was clean. She was, you know, she's great and she's beautiful now. But I remember telling her, she was like, what the hell is going on with you, man? You know? And I remember telling her what it was, and she cried so hard because at that moment, I know that she was like, oh my God, like, you don't even know, lady, little girl, what's about to happen, you know? And I didn't, you know, I didn't know the magnitude of what crack was going to do to my life, right? I didn't even understand the consequence. I didn't understand anything. I was just like, oh, I got to get high, I got to get high, you know? And by that time, that's when, you know, life is just like, you know, I was never really homeless or anything like that. But I was out there, man. I was out there, you know, stealing. I was out there smoking crack, being in crack houses and doing all this shit, you know, that I had no business doing, you know. And it didn't even fit my swagger, bro. Okay? It didn't. That's not who I was, but that's what I was doing, right? I was just fucking crackhead walking the streets and didn't hate it. It was just, it wasn't what, you know, I did not fit in. Let's put it that way, you know. And then I was in, and that's also started the part where I started breaking hearts, man. I started breaking my mama's heart, you know, manipulating the women that I was with, you know, manipulating anybody that was close to me, you know. I was just really, you know, a really, fucked up person, you know. So then, eventually my first introduction into, recovery was, October of 2009. And I was entered Austin Recovery. And I went because I don't know why I went, you know. Somebody was like, why don't you try rehab? And I just didn't want to smoke. I just wanted to have a break. And that's what I did, right? And I stayed so, and now Miss Carolyn was my counselor then. I love her so much. She was my counselor then. And I stayed clean and sober when I got out. For about 6 months, right? And then April 20th of 2010 was my second time that I went to Austin Recovery. And this time, you know, stuff stuck a little bit, right? You know, I was so scared, right? And all I wanted to do was just like, you know, whatever, you know, whatever I got to do. And it's and all I knew was me smoking crack wasn't working, right? And I didn't want to do it anymore. So whatever you say I got to do, that's what I got to do, right? And so I when I got out of rehab, you know, I became a member of Narcotics Anonymous, right? And one of the main reasons why I went there, and me and my friend Andrew was talking about that. One of the main reasons why I went there was because it was majorly black, you know, and I was tired of being around white folks. No, I'm just joking. I'm just really joking. it's not a good joke. But anyways, so I went there and, you know, I just followed in line. I did the 90-90. I worked some steps, keyword some, right? And a lot of things started happening. I stayed absent. I stayed, you know, clean and sober, and I stayed abstinent. And I was just like, I'm not doing anything. This is what I'm going to do. This is the decision that I made. And I did that, right? And I was going to meetings, you know, I started working for Goodwill, you know, and, as I was staying clean, life was happening. So I just stayed clean, right? And went to meetings and, I moved up in my company, that was great and all, you know, I met a girl, not my wife now, I met a girl and we got together. She was clean too, you know, and, I was sober and clean for 5 years until I wasn't sober and clean anymore. So a couple of events that had happened was, you know, I invested my sober time and all this, you know, and how I felt and how I looked in this person, right? So when that person made a decision to not be sober no more and walk away from the relationship, I was devastated, right? And let me tell you something. If you work in a program and you're not like, because we say that, alcohol and all that's just, you know, just a symptom and stuff like that. Like, we need to focus on what's really going on. And if you're not really digging in and like, you know, working on some character defects or really digging in, trying to figure out why the hell you do what you do and what you've been doing. If you're not doing that, you know, the material things on the outside are going to stay. But once, if you're not doing anything, eventually how you feel inside is going to show up on the outside. Right. And I was not stable, emotionally stable, financially stable, mentally stable, or anything like that. Like, I wasn't really doing no work at that time. I was just staying so clean and sober just based off of fear and just by doing meetings and stuff like that. And I'm telling you, I'm here to tell you right now, if you're doing that, man, you need to figure it out, because, you know, you cannot survive off that. You just can't. Right. And I'm a living testament of that. So soon after that, I made it. Right. This drinking thing has been my fucking issue, you know, that kept me out there longer than what I anticipated. Right. And, I thought to myself, I was like, you know, alcohol has never really been a problem. Crack cocaine has always been a problem. Like, the two using things, like, if I'm drinking, I ain't stealing. Right. If I'm drinking, I ain't, you know, manipulating people. Right. I'm chilling if I'm drinking. Right. You know, like, it didn't connect to me. Right. So I made it in my mind. I manipulated my own self and everybody around me to think that it is okay. After 5 years, you know, I've been smoking crack, but I'm going to be okay because I'm going to drink. That was the conversation. Right. And, so I made a decision to drink. I remember sitting with Angela, my sponsor at that time. And I was like, look, I mean, I need to say this too. It was a conscious decision. Right. I didn't just follow on a beer. Right. I was sitting there and I said, listen, after I gave y'all 5 years of my life, I think I'm going to have a drink, you know? And she was like, what? You know? And at that time, it was kind of like, it didn't matter who said anything to me. I made a decision, right? And so I made a decision based off all the fear and the insecurities and the low self-esteem and the self-pity that I was dealing with at that time, right? And I needed that crutch. And alcohol for me has always been that crutch for me. The beginning of time, before crack, before ecstasy, before cocaine, all that type of stuff, alcohol has been there. And it's always been my solution, right? So I knew that. And so I started drinking and stuff like that, you know. And I did, you know. And life stayed the same, right? I just didn't go to no meeting no more. You know, as much as I wanted to go in there, you know, and get a spiritual feeding, I couldn't, right? So I abandoned everything that I knew. Right. And I had a resentment with that, You know what I mean? Because I felt like I still deserve, you know, a spiritual feeding and to be here. And I, you know, and what I know today is that I need some type of principle and some structures and some shit like that, right? I cannot move in this life without it. Me, I can't, right? And the only way that I knew how to get, you know, build a relationship with God or whatever like that, and the only place that I felt really comfortable doing that was in the rooms, right? I know that today, right? Anyway, so soon after that, life was going good. And then, you know, I met my wife today, right? And it was beautiful, you know. And we both, you know, had our own struggles and stuff like that. And, you know, but we made it through. So soon after, but we found each other. And when she found me, though, I was way, way gone, bruh. You know what I mean? Meaning that I was still reeling from a bad relationship, still dealing with feelings that I wasn't dealing with, just relapsed and just trying to, you know, get through. But I found her and I was caught up in the excitement and stuff like that. Love, you know, and so then, of course, we get married, you know, fall in love, get married, buy a house and all these things like that. And life is going good. Right. And then soon after that, for the last three, before I got sober, I made a decision to smoke crack again. And you can already know how that ended up. And I have never, ever, ever put somebody through what I've put her through. Right. I was still for those 3 years, 2016 to 2018, I was in three to four sober. I mean, rehabs, because I could not let go of alcohol. Right. I was just so fixated on the fact that, you know, I still felt like I can do this, right, with alcohol. You know, I don't want to smoke crack, but I can do this. And I could not, you know, but at the same time, I knew that I had to go to rehab. Right. Right. So anyway, so, I put that girl through so much, man, you know, so much. But then, when so much is so much, you know, you hit rock bottom. And so in 2018, my rock bottom was sitting in the crack house with an ex-girlfriend, you know. Didn't know she smoked crack. I was happy that she smoked crack because I was like, oh, shit, I got a friend, you know. And we can be cracky friends together. And it was horrible. By that time, you know, I was on my own pretty much. My wife kicked me out. I mean, she was long gone and shit, right? And, yeah. And so my rock bottom was, you know, I was just, for me, you know, for so long, I was trying to keep shit together, man. I was trying to hold on to, you know, my sanity by holding on to my material things and going to rehabs, doing all these things to keep what I had and keep my wife and make her happy and all those things like that, you know. But until I really fell apart was when, I knew that I had to fall fully apart to get it together. And what that looked like for me, I remember sitting in the garage with the girl and she say, you know, I was telling her, I need to go to, you know how when you fucked up and you go to those sober rants, you know? And I told her and I was like, I need to go to rehab and get back in recovery, you know, being looking stupid and high, you know? And she was like, why would you, well, you already went to rehab. It didn't work, you know? And I just couldn't believe what she said, right? And I just couldn't believe that, you know, but she was basing that off what I went through, you know? And I was kind of like, nah, man, you know, it works if you work it, you know, that type of shit. You know, I was so offended, you know, and I was defending recovery and I was just like, you know, fuck it, you know? No, that's not how it works, you know? And it works. And right then and there, you know, I knew, not right then and there, but I knew that, you know, I needed to get back, you know, but I didn't know how to, you know, I knew that it was coming, but I didn't know when, you know, so I stayed in that crack house, you know, and I cut everybody off and I didn't care anymore. I remember my wife was calling me about shit and I was like, I'm smoking crack. How can I show up for this? How can I pay the insurance? I can't, you know, like I just can't anymore. Right. And so the day I went into Austin recovery, after that, all that shit, a lot of things happen. I'm cutting out a whole bunch of stuff, but I'm trying to get to it. But, you know, for me, when I went into Austin recovery, came back to Austin recovery, Miss Carolyn was my counselor again. And, you know, before I even got there, I already did step one and two, cause I was very clear that, you know, my life was unmanageable. Right. And then by that time, I was very convinced that I was an alcoholic. And I knew that just by my experiences and what I've been through, that I was powerless, right? And then, you know, coming to believe, I knew because I tasted freedom before that there was, that I had, that there, you know, that I could do this shit, right? And that, you know, coming to believe, in step two, coming to believe that a power greater than myself restored me to sanity. I needed that sanity so bad, right? And I knew the only way, just because of, even though I was sitting in those rooms for those 5 years, I was listening, right? And I had caught a lot of time, but at the same time, I still had a lot of knowledge of what to do and what not to do, you know? So 1, 2, and 3 was not, you know, like what I'm going to do. It was like, I know, you know, boom, boom, boom. Let's get to the inventory, right? You know, what I can say is today that I am convinced and I know that I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol, right? That's what I do know. I'm truly convinced. Anyway, so I got a sponsor, right? By this time, I mean, shit fucked up, man. And at the time, I didn't fucking care if it was fucked up or not. I really did not care. I was just like, I got to get sober. I can't deal with you or whatever, whatever like that. It was a very, very sad story. But at the same time, you know, I was really okay with just starting over from scratch, you know. I was done, right? And so step forward, sponsor, you know, and, you know, started working the steps, you know, and, you know, step four, doing that moral inventory and shit like that, right? This time around, I knew that, you know, and after talking to my sponsor, she was like, no, we're finna do this shit, Nicole, right? And I had to get a sponsor that was like, can talk to me, you know, and be like, and can call me out on some bullshit because, you know, somebody who's been through the program before, as much as I was not really doing much work, I listened, you know, I know what to say and not what, and what to say to get by. Right. And, you know, so I'm doing this inventory and it was such a release, you know, and I was able to, you know, really throw up on that piece of paper pretty much. Right. And then get all this shit out. Right. And, it was just much needed. Right. And then I was able, you know, in step five, you know, I was able to really tell somebody all that dark shit that I was hiding, that I was holding really, really dear and close to me. Right. You know, and I'm telling you, man, sponsorship, I know that we're supposed to pick somebody equal to get to those steps, you know, but if you really want to be vulnerable and really get honest with somebody, get a sponsor that you feel comfortable with so you can get honest, right? And be, I mean, that is very important if you ask me, right? You know, six and seven, you know, looking at those character defects and stuff like that, you know, I didn't have a problem with people telling me, you know, I knew that I was an asshole, you know, that I was a bitch, you know, that I was judgmental, that I was extremely selfish, you know, that I had some, you know, really fucked up views on some shit, you know. And, but the beautiful thing about that was in seven, I was able to ask God to help me, you know, remove that shit. Right. And it's not like, you know, things just go away, but, you know, I was able to identify those things and like work on those things. Right. You know, and eight, making that list, it was not hard to make the list. Right. And nine, you know, I had a little bit more trouble, you know, making those amends and stuff. I had made a huge amends to my foster parents and a huge amends to my mother-in-law. You know, my wife was like, girl, if you don't shut up, I'm tired of hearing your sorries. Like, just stay sober, you know? I'm trying to hurry up here. And, you know, so I'm going to stop right there and tell you where I'm at now. Just because, real quick, you know, after I got a recovery, after I got out of the rehab, you know, I went to the sober home. I stayed there 6 months, even though I had a whole house here. But, you know, I wasn't deserving of the house for the shit that I went through. And, you know, me and my wife, you know, did get back together. And, you know, we were working on our relationship, our marriage and stuff like that. And it's been hard, but, you know, it's good. Let's put it that way. It's whatever. You know, and, you know, working down my CDL, did a lot of good things, you know, but something that has, you know, in the last, you know, working the steps, you know, I was going to meetings, I'm doing this shit, you know, sponsoring people, you know, really being active in the community and stuff. And, about 6 to 7 months ago, I was kind of like, man, something not right. Right? Like, not something not right, but I felt like I was missing something. You know, I felt like I was like, man, I'm doing, so what is it? Right? And it was kind of like, you know, things stalled for a little bit. You know what I mean? And let me tell you what happened was, you know, I was praying to my high power, you know, because through this process of working the steps, I'm building this relationship with God. And so what happened was, you know, I was asking God, I was like, look, man, what is going on? Like, I need something else, you know, like what? And what happened was, you know, for me, it was like I needed a change, meaning what I, you know, life was happening good and shit, but I could not just maintain on what I had when I came into these rooms, right? My whole objective was not to drink or smoke crack, right? Now my things look totally different. Like, I'm not struggling with that, right? What I'm struggling with is showing up, my character defects, you know, maintaining the spirituality at all times, you know, growing, right? And so I made a decision to change sponsors, right? And I was asking God to show me somebody, and I did. And what happened was, you know, a lot was exposed to me, meaning like, you know, you're not doing a 10 or 11. You went from 9 all the way to 12, girl. You know what I mean? And that's not good. You know what I mean? And because I was, you know, conflict spiritually, you know, just, you know, negative and stuff like that. So got a new sponsor, and the sponsor. And what I'm saying is, you know, sometimes it's okay to change. If you're not getting something from somebody else, it's okay to, you know, switch it up a little bit, you know, because your recovery is very important, you know. And then this is, your life is not about hurting people's feelings or not, right? So I made a decision to do that. And, you know, I'm reworking the steps again, you know. I'm currently on step 4, you know. And now, you know, today, you know, 10 and 11 are very important. You know, I have, you know, established, you know, a routine, you know, work, you know, doing my, you know, step 10 inventory at night, and also, you know, being, you know, building that relationship with my higher power. You know what I mean? You know, getting up extra 30 minutes early, you know, to pray and read some readings, you know, and meditate and like take time to like, you know, free focus and get my thoughts in order, you know, life ain't perfect, man, you know, but if I want to maintain this sobriety and this clean time and stuff like that and continue to grow, you know, I have to do some certain things, you know, and today, you know, I understand that, you know, today I made a decision, you know, that, you know, I plan on, you know, staying clean and sober. And to do that, you know, I have to do stuff like this, be a service, sponsor, go to meetings, you know, and not just go to meetings, share at meetings, you know, and be honest and be genuine, you know. But anyways, life is good, man. You know, I hope I was able to give somebody some type of, you know, hope out of this. You know, again, I'm Black, blessed, and highly favored. And if no one has told you that they loved you today, I love you. So thank you.
Nicole, that was awesome. I have so much respect for you.
Way to go, Nicole! Oh, Kathy!
I was good.
Kathy.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Nicole.
Thanks, Nicole.
Thanks,
everybody.
Awesome. Thanks, Nicole.
Thanks, Nicole. Give me a call when you are ready.